Good morning. I call this meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, March 12th. Would those who care to join me and the rest of the board in saying the Pledge of Allegiance? Welcome Supervisor Sanders back to the dais. He's been on some adventures and travels. Hope you had a great time and you had some.
Costa Rica was better than Washington, D.C.
No surprise, though, but I'm sure you enjoyed talking politics, too, and lottery. So, public comment number one, and this comment period is for people to address topics on today's agenda, although we're going to pretty much have people come up as the agenda item exists. But if there's something that you feel that you'd like to address and you can't stay for it, or something else that you'd like to address with us, now would be the first opportunity to do so. No one's getting up, so we'll go ahead and we'll go on to items 4 and 5, which are related to each other, and I'm going to invite Sheriff Paul Fitzgerald to come up, and along with Nick Lenny and John Asmussen and Connie Forrestall. Welcome, at all.
Thank you.
Go ahead, please.
Well, we have received word a while ago that two of our detention officers have received orders from the military, and they're going to be deployed for 400 days, and leading, I believe it's around the 1st of July. However, between now and July, they're going to be gone at intermittent times to attend training to prepare for their deployment overseas. So what we are here today on this request is to ask that we be authorized to hire, to backfill those positions, which would take us above our normal appropriated amount of employees. Once the two employees return, then through attrition, those positions will go back down to the authorized rate where we are. This is something in my 27th year as sheriff, we've done this a few times when we have people that are going to be gone for extended periods. So this is in line with previous requests.
Okay, thank you. Supervisors, any questions?
Yeah, so for the sheriff, but really more for Connie. So how do we stand? So this is going to impact this year's budgeted salary dollars if we go over, and these two do not depart until the start of next fiscal year. How are we sitting on budgeted salary dollars versus actual used at this point?
We're actually very good. I did a figuring really realistically, if we were to put conditional offers out to two people today, they're realistically not going to start until the middle of like April. So I look to see how much it's going to cost with benefits, shift differential, salary, and everything. And you're looking at about, just under $26,000 for the two ABOs. I did go through, and the guaranteed people that we did not have working, we had two COs that have been, or two vacant positions since the end of August and the middle of September. And I did figures for that, and we have not paid in salaries and benefits. Approximately $90,000 for those two. Now, I realize there's been overtime, obviously, to cover the people that have been gone, but I, with all the FMLA we've had in the jail, vacant positions, family sick, vacations, it's difficult to say how many overtime hours were specifically for those two that we were manning, but I know it wasn't $90,000, so it's probably just a wash as far as...
Thank you.
As I understand this, that these two are being hired as temporary positions?
No. They'll be hired as full-time positions, and they will have that. And when the other two come back at the end of 400-day deployment, as the jail is probably the is the largest division of the sheriff's office, it also has more turnover than any other division. So we will either know before they return that people are going to be leaving, and then we'll just hold those slots vacant until they come. If we're at full strength when they return, we'll be above the two authorized strengths until two others leave or step down, and then we'll get go back to the normal appropriated number of employees for that position.
Okay. And when discussion had been kind of about this as you were building into coming today, that was the part that that concerned me a little bit after I thought about it more, because we could end up, not likely given the turnover at as detention officers there, but we could end up in a situation where you would be overstaffed until someone or two people resigned then, if both officers who have gone on military leave decide to come back also. That's the other factor, correct?
Well, the possibility and potential is certainly there. But I believe if you look back at our history, as the example of Connie just said, we've already been too short to talk, and we're trying to fill. And so it's something that I don't believe is going to be an issue upon their return. And I think what we've seen historically proves that out.
If you have somebody leave, say, a couple months before one of these people is going to come back, one of these officers is going to come back, would you then just make sure hold the position open for a couple months rather than hiring somebody?
We probably would, but I would also want to look at the current status of where we are. We might have other people out on extended leave. We might have other openings. I mean, it's, there's times when we try to hire as quick as we can, because we can hire someone in a law enforcement agency. You don't hire them, give them a week's training, and they're on their own. They got to go through state training. Then they come back. They got to go through a three-month field training officer position. So by the time their effectiveness is going to be felt, the agency, it's several months down the road.
What is your turnover for detention officers for a year?
Well, here again, we have in the jail, what you'll see is folks will take a job in the jail as the bottom rung of the ladder. They may look at it. Yes, they want to get into law enforcement, be a street officer, either county or city. And there are times where I hire people who have applied to the sheriff's office to be deputy sheriff, but in the situation that we'll be talking about next, we have two other agencies in Story County that can be rather predatory at times. And we have one agency that's hiring two of our detention officers, and another agency that's hiring one of our dispatchers. So I think that shows we hire quality people here, but it's kind of a race sometimes who can offer a sworn certified police officer position.
Mm-hmm. How many authorized positions do you have right now as detention officers?
How many detention officers, John?
32.
So Connie, can you tell me what you normally see as a rate?
With history, it's about an average of 5 a year.
5 a year?
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe
it
seems
this last year has really hit a large. Okay. I think this last year has been above average.
Actually, the number is closer to 7.
5 to 7, so. Mm-hmm. But one every other month. So you have some, about one every other month then, good average debt. So you would have some flexibility to project forward, and so the concern that Supervisor Olson has, you can minimize.
Well, one of the other problems that I know that we talked about is that in a short time here, we're going to be down 5 positions in the jail. And that reflects, it is not good for those that are left to fill, because things offer canceled, vacations sometimes are canceled, and we got to have people to staff those positions. And that really creates a tremendous drain on the staff that's left until we can get back to full strength.
Mm-hmm. And I know, as you have mentioned here at the board table, just in also conversations we've had, it's just not the detention officers who hold that title who are being stressed, but your command staff, your jail commander and assistant commander, are filling in for shifts.
correct?
Yeah, it's not uncommon to see my jail commander, John Osmussen, filling in as a detention officer and work one of the shifts trying to take inmates to court. You wouldn't think the detention officer is using him to do, and that's on top of the other appointments that he has as an administrator.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, so I'd just say it sounds to me like so this clearly has an impact for FY19, but we got dollars in the budget to be able to absorb it or largely absorb it. It's not going to have any impact in 2020 because these two positions are gone for 400 days. So we'll have this conversation again, I would imagine, as we're talking budget for 2021 to see where we are and how things are going. So I'd make the motion of allowing the sheriff's office to go above approved positions and hire two additional detention officers in preparation for two of our current detention officers leaving on military leave.
Okay.
I'd second the motion.
Okay. Further discussion? No? Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Thank you for that. And then we're going to move on next to the conditional offer for a detention officer.
Yes. This is kind of gets to be a little bit more complex, but along the same line, whereas we have a balance in the jail of male to female detention officers, we're having two detention officers that have been offered conditional offers to become Iowa State University police officers. And so we're expecting those two departing, but we have a male and a female. So we're looking at, we have a list for male, but we do not have a list for female. So we're hurrying to put together a list and do testing. So we're only asking for the one position because by the time we get the testing completed, scores, interviews done, people ready to come on the office, it'd just be a normal time we would need to hurry. But we'd like to show the detention officer position so we can get that person a little bit farther along in training should or when these people leave.
Mm-hmm. Questions or comments from the board?
Mm-hmm.
I have none. Right? I entertain a motion.
I would move that we approve this request.
Second.
Right. No discussion. So Merkin?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Olson? Aye.
Thank you.
Sheriff, thank you very much. Okay. Now I'm going to invite Now we're going to switch to a discussion. It's actually a continuation of the discussion and consideration of financial support for $3 million toward the construction of a $48 million Healthy Life Center proposal for the City of Ames, and a commitment to provide an ongoing operating subsidy of $200,000 per year. As viewing this as more of a continuation than a separate process, we're going to not have a formal presentation from anyone on the Healthy Lifestyle Committee. And I'm going to ask the board if either one of the board members have a presentation. Otherwise, I do have a few slides.
So just clarification, Loris, what you got here on our agenda, it says an operating subsidy of $200,000 per year. I thought we had agreed last time we spoke that it was up to $200,000 a year and not the set $200,000. So I'm just looking for clarification.
Sure. We just brought it right over as it was listed last time because it was a continuation. So it was continuity and listing for that as no decision had been made. So that's why the phrasing is exactly the same right now.
Yep.
Okay. So, all right, then I'm going to just, I've been contacted by some people who've either asked me to justify where I got my impression about where we stand on the budget and or offered kind of a deals or their own ideas about how we could pay for the entire $3 million. I'm going to respond with a few slides to where I've gotten my numbers
and
from.
And then could I give a little update after you've done that?
Sure. Yes. Yeah. Okay, so the county funds a little differently than the city as far as how we levy, and that's one thing I learned in some of the contacts that were made. So we have a general fund that's maxed at 3.5%, and I'm not doing your presentation, Lisa. These are just a few. Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't understand the 3.5%.
$3.50.
$3.50.
Okay.
Our general fund levy is $3.50. It can't be any more than that without special circumstances.
Correct. We do have the option. Let's see if I've got the right one here. Yes. But we are given the option of a supplemental general fund. And we published for the fiscal year 20 budget that our levy for the supplemental general fund would be $1.02 for each $1,000. And so the published dollars that we put out is that we expect $4,994,606. At one point in the process, as we were trying to set our levy, we did discuss a lower levy amount, as you see here, and then those dollars that were discussed internally are $4,652,443. And so the difference, as we discuss later today, where we're going to end up approving our budget, the difference between the one that was published and one alternate that we discussed during our budget sessions is $342,000. And the key, I feel, as it adheres to this discussion today, is that at $342,000 extra in our general fund, it would take 3 years to yield $1 million. So the $3 million requested would be us at some type of higher levy, similar to what we published, or even higher next year, to yield the $3 million if it comes out of our general fund. And then I just made a reference here for, in case we recall this during the budget discussion itself. We do have, we are able to do urban renewal and revitalization funds or TIF funds. And we have obligated a lot of that TIF revenue, of our revenue part stream, in the last few years, primarily around the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. So the numbers here I'm going to present next are the projected, once again projected, because until we get to the whole year, the auditor is not, auditor's department is not really able to come down to the penny. So these are projected, and these are projected available for Story County's policy of encumbering a maximum of 50% of the TIF revenues and leaving 50% for the townships, the school districts, and other taxing entities. Most of this money comes from the wind turbines. So using a projected chart, this is a draft, this is a best guesstimate that we were provided internally. I just pulled some key numbers off, I think, applicable to this discussion. In fiscal year 20, we are only going to have $77,000 left over from our 50% allocation. Fiscal year 21, we'll have 74,000 roughly. And in fiscal year 22, we'll have roughly $67,000. Clearly, this is not a million, and even I was optimistic in my original thoughts about maybe $500,000 a year as far as any type of cash flowing. What happens in 22 is that we pay off a bond, the bond through TIF. And so the estimated available revenues go up in fiscal year 23 to about $334,000. And then you can see it stays pretty steady until fiscal year 27 when we get up to $609,000. So my point here and why I made the statements I made in the paper is given the two funding sources that are available to us, which would be the general funds where the money would come from, and then we'd use some supplemental funds to kind of backfill ourselves, if you will, or the TIF, I can't find a way to get to the request number.
So, Morris, go back to that slide if you don't mind, because I question all those numbers, but specifically question the top three. Are you calculating in there increase in valuation? Are you calculating in there the wind towers that have not reached their maximum valuation or in a couple cases don't have any valuation? Are you calculating all that in there? Because I think those numbers are misrepresented. Look.
Okay, they are the numbers that I believe I requested from the deputy auditor based upon what we could realistically know now. It is my understanding that that's her best projection given the data she has now. I don't know whether the two that still come on, but the two that still come on, are you talking about they're ramping up? Or they will start at the 5%.
Either it's still 5% growth. Whether they're starting or they're in the middle of ramping, there's still growth every year.
There is growth, but I guess I'd like to point out that all of these numbers are representative of, what, about 150 wind turbines? How many do you think will be coming on? Two or three?
I'd look to Leanne Arter for that.
Okay, but so as far as the percentage, if you want to go ahead and figure out if this is what 150 are yielding, how much more will three yield, especially if they're just beginning
but
to
they're run yielding on. A million, they're yielding $1.2 million or $1.3 million a year in available TIP dollars. And then a lot of it is going to sort of pay debt from Dacus Lake we're working on, and now the research park we're working on. But isn't it, Lisa, isn't it roughly $1.2 million, $1.3 million a year that comes out of TIP right
no,
now?
No, it's like 900,000.
Yeah, it's 888,000 are the estimates, not 1.2 or 3. Okay, so those are the numbers that we have the best estimates on. So just to give somebody, I was questioned again about where that TIF money has gone that we spent. We have paid out, actually, $7.7 million. We have approved this year another $1 million we expect to pay out for the Tedesco Environmental Learning Center during fiscal year 20, headed for its opening in June of next year. So we have put $4.7 million of those dollars outside of AIMS, but we have put $4 million of those dollars in AIMS. So there was some question about whether Ames was getting any of that money. Once again, the majority of it's coming from the wind farms in the northeast part of the county, but we are getting some from like Better, as for example. The first big issue was mostly for Dacus Lake, Better, and then the bike trail going outside of Nevada. So taking a look at sample bonding payments in general, one of the other numbers that were put out actually requested by a former board member, run for it borrowing the $1 million, the last $1 million for TELC. And these numbers that were projected, once again, projected numbers, at $1 million borrowed at 3% for 10 years is a payment of $119,000 per year annual payment. It's very rough. Don't anybody get out your financial calculator here, okay? But the point is that for the first 3 years, we wouldn't even have the minimum yielded by TIF per the projected numbers to cover the annual payment. We can, I understand, restructure or structure the debt so that it would be almost an interest-only payment for the first 3 years, and then it would have to pay out more on the back end. $3 million. I just basically took these numbers and multiplied by three. $3 million at 3% for 20 years is approximately a $350,000 per year annual payment. There. Okay, and so those are just the numbers that I've been asked several times about why don't you think we can afford this. So, and thank you. And I believe Supervisor Merkin asked to speak next.
Thank you. And I appreciate that review, and I also appreciate the time that we had. We were presented with quite a bit of information just before our last meeting, and I appreciated the time that I had to look at that and also do some of my own research. I agree this is a very worthwhile project. A considerable amount of good planning and efforts gone into it, but I have some concerns about the request for the county to enter into a permanent funding arrangement. first I was looking at studying the secondary, secondary service maps, and this is on page 6 of the consultant's 500-page report. And it includes, as a secondary service area, Story City, Nevada, and Huxley, and Story County, and then Madrid and Boone, but also by default include Gilbert and Kelly, I presume, in Story County. The report mentions that there is a wellness center in Story City and one planned in Nevada. The report did not include the one that's called the Three C's in Huxley. So it's the Citizens Community Center. I visited the Huxley Center. I visited the Story City Community Health Center. I also spoke with the city administrator in Nevada to see what the plans were here. Both the Huxley and the Story City wellness centers, they're a little bit different, but they're both very well thought out. They're very well developed. They have a very good usage in their areas. The Huxley one's 11,000 square feet, has basketball courts, a raised walking running track, a racquetball court, and weight rooms, and do a lot of classes. Very similar in Story City. The Story City project is, as many of you may know, it's blended with Mary Breen Medical Center, and they have lots of, besides Story City, lots of people from the northern part of Story County and southern part of Hamilton County who are members. They've both been, I think the Huxley one started in 2003 and the Story City one in 2005. They're well-established programs. Nevada, as several of you know, has the SCORE outdoor recreation, and they have numerous outdoor options. They have the Aquatic Center, which is for the summer, baseball, softball, tennis, basketball, soccer, playground, and pavilion. It's very impressive. The county did support development with 36,000 local option sales tax money, one-time money, I understand, for SCORE. And also, there was a CAT grant for $200,000 for Story City, and the county provided a $20,000 match there. So there has been some one-time money into those two. Huxley, I understand, was a city bond issue, plus other money was raised, but the county did not participate. Nevada's planning an outdoor facility, estimated cost of $5 million. They say maybe more of a field house than a rec center, but it would have 35,000 square feet, three basketball and volleyball courts, a multi-purpose room, some offices, and they are including some more multi-purpose space for future needs. That's their current plan. That's come down a ways from a plan they had some years back, but they're feeling pretty good about the plan and that it's appropriate. Collins, also, you may know, has recently opened a wellness center. I've not been down there to visit, but I did just have Mayor Collins just stop by coincidentally to see me because he was in town, and he told me about that and the 6 years of work they put into that. Collins is not in the secondary service area that the consultants, drew on this map, but the other places are. I really have some concerns that the consultants' numbers of how many people they think will come from the secondary service area will already come there, given the well-developed centers in Story City and Huxley, and also the plans for Nevada. I do know that the city of Ames, there are several out-county residents who work in the city, and they maybe because of that will go to the Healthy Life Center. Given some information from Dr. McFarland Clinic, about a third of the employees live outside of Ames. They may be motivated because they work in a clinic. In medical setting, they may be motivated, but I'm just not sure that we're getting to the numbers. All the other examples I've seen when the county has contributed money, and I may be wrong, but to something that the county did not own, were one-time numbers, and pretty much smaller numbers than what we're being asked here. I have trouble with the county paying ongoing operating expenses. We have several things in the county that are on our plate that we are in the midst of that need to be finished, and to take that much money annually out of our, what's available for county essential uses or other purposes and put that to a new project at this point, I don't think would be wise. And I think if we made an ongoing commitment toward operating expenses that other cities might likely expect similar support, I've already been told they will.
I've been told also.
So that would erode further funding that the county has for essential services, for roads and bridges, for the interoperability communication system that we're working on for our first responders. We have a watershed report that the previous board was very, I had a lot of foresight in putting together a countywide watershed report. A lot of things that need to be done to make that a reality. We're just beginning that. And we know right now we're working with a group of employees, but we know we're going to need more resources if we're going to address water quality in the county. So I'm very concerned about the ask. And I've also heard problems with the proposed location. Some people are not happy with that. I know that there was a lot of looking, but being on the northwest side of Ames doesn't strike people as being very accessible to other places in the county. I've heard from many people from Ames and one person from Gilbert who support the county providing funding. I've heard from some people in Ames who do not support it, and I've heard from some people out in other parts of the county who do not support it. So I know Hartman Senior Services needs more space desperately. I understand that. But I understand Hartman's raised $3.5 million towards the need, and I'm glad to hear that. If this doesn't happen, you know, I wish everybody well. If this happens, I just don't see the county's role being as major as is being expected. So, thank you.
Yeah, so I guess I'll take my swipe at it because I think pretty clearly I feel differently about this than you guys do. First thing I would say is I count 13 wind towers that were added since 2013, which are going to be ramping up. I think the numbers are artificially low that you presented. I think, Linda, you're 100% right, at least in my knowledge, and I would actually look to Jane Halliburton. There's a long history of Story County participating with the upfront cost in projects similar to this, and not much of a history of ongoing operations. I think this is kind of a unique opportunity for the citizens of Story County, and so it makes me feel a little differently. And the way that's funded, as I see it, is in fact based on, and Loris, you pointed this out rightly a couple times, a nickel increase in property taxes raises the $200,000 up to $200,000 a year in ongoing cost. I believe that the dollars are there to be able to run this through urban renewal. I think it is an appropriate use of the urban renewal dollars at $1 million a year over the next 3 years. That's actually, it doesn't start for the next 18 months the way all the math would work. And I think it is important. I would do this. So we have been so fortunate here in Story County to be involved in these conversations at the staff level from day one. We've had Deb Shildroth serve as our representative on these conversations. And to my knowledge, Deb has attended every meeting and been part of the conversation. And I think we're being a little short-sighted if we don't get some input from the person that we've asked, that we've tasked with being our representative to this. And I don't recall that other than just giving us an artificial presentation, we've ever sat here, the three of us at one meeting, and asked for Deb to come up and give us her thoughts as she's evaluated this. And then the final thing, so I'd like to have Deb come up, Loris. And then the final thing that I would say, Linda, I think you're right that we've never seen dollars approaching this, but we very clearly see percentage of projects approaching this. $3 million to $48 million is comparable to what we put in percentage-wise to other projects. So that's where I come down on all of this. And, Loris, I would request that we have Deb Shildroth come up because I'd like to ask her opinion on all of this. Okay. She's been part of this all the way through.
And my question is, did you talk to her first about this?
I mentioned to her that I might ask her to come up depending on how the conversation was going.
Okay. And I hear it right there, depending on how the conversation is going. All right, Deb, if you want to give your opinion, I don't know that we sent you as a – we sent you as a staff person not to give an opinion, but you may do what you feel is appropriate.
Brief history, I was asked by Paul Toots in February of 2016 following the meeting that he had had with Nancy Carroll about putting together a steering committee and having representatives sit on that steering committee. So I went and served in the capacity of my job serving the county, and I think in all the conversations with identifying the needs in the community, not only what Heartland Senior Services means and what they do for the community, but as a whole, Mary Greeley's needs with their warm water pool, their therapy pool, their physical therapy services, and then adding in the components of the indoor pool and making it a concept that, as do all Heartland Senior Generational serving in Centralia County. I've seen the numbers, been involved with the meetings, listening to the consultants talk about the price tag of this and what it takes to make such a concept come to fruition. The numbers are out there for all of us to see in terms of the $3 million ask of the county and the annual operating costs. And again, remember that annual operating costs would help level the cost that all county residents would have to pay to participate in this particular facility. So I do support in terms of what is being asked from the steering committee for the purpose of the program, but we all know the decision lies with the board.
Correct. Also, can you back up to the cost? Because since you did sit on that committee and you were representing the county, what did you think when it went from 26 to 28 million to $48 million? Were you involved in those conversations that jumped that large dollar amount from when we were originally talked to? And you did not, were you aware of the county's funding situations and at the time?
Well, at that point in time, Laura said that there was no ask that was coming forward to the county. I mean, it was still putting those figures together and determining the breakdown between the different entities at the table who would take what back to their board. And so, I mean, the large percentage of the cost has to do with the pool. And that was explained to us.
Okay, so I guess I'm a little uncomfortable with a staff person giving this type of assessment, okay, whether she is thinking that we should do this. Are you giving us that advice?
We get recommendations from staff all the time.
I know, but it's not on kind of I think this is different with the ask of the funding, but I'll give to you on that, Rick.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll give to you on that.
And if I could push back on one thing, so I keep hearing this doom and gloom
on the
county's financial position, Morris, and I've got to push back on that. So the reality is there's not been a time in the last, oh, my goodness, in the last 30 years anyway, that the county's been in a stronger fiscal position than it is today. We ended the last fiscal year with over $22 million in reserves. That's up from $7 million just a decade ago. The county has, for a long time, been the lowest per capita taxing and spending county in the state of Iowa, 99 out of 99. We remain there to this day. We'll see where we are as we publish these new numbers. And as far as we're not taxing at our maximum allowable levels in our supplemental, we're not taxing at our maximum allowable levels in our rural fund. We have worked really, really hard. And before me, before you guys and with you guys, we work really hard to be responsible stewards of taxpayer dollars. And when a project like this that is one of one, and we all try to compare things to other things, but this is a one of one kind of opportunity, that best case scenario, the people of Ames who are going to be the ones paying for this, the people of Ames should get a reasonable opportunity to vote for themselves and see what's happening. And what I don't appreciate and what I disagree with is using some kind of artificial doom and gloom about our budget situation when it's as strong as it's ever been, including the one that we're going to adopt later today. It's as strong as it's ever been.
Well, I'd like to point out that I got the numbers from the auditor's office. I did not make these numbers up. And nor did I have $119,000 a year. All right. And that, as I wanted to point out, was requested by a previous board member, a previous board. So nobody's sitting here finagling numbers. We are going to later on see a slide that shows that for the first time in 7 years, if, depending on how you interpret what a balanced budget is, we are going to go ahead and put $1 million that we show in reserve up front on this budget to go ahead and have a balanced budget. Now, I didn't have time to go in and really take a look at where we end our budget every year, but last year for our balanced budget up front, we ended up, it was a $6 million spread. And that's on right there. You could take a look there that we ended up pulling money out because we have impact. Yeah, we're going to, when it comes up here, you
if we're pulling money out, how are the reserves going up?
So it shows it on our budget that we published. It shows our reserves will be down another $1 million from the ending fund balance of this year to 20. When you pull it up on the screen, take a look. It's $18 million and then down to $17 million. Last time I did the math, that's $1 million less.
Absolutely. But that's all based, and this year's budget is based on projects that were approved in one fiscal year or the funding was received in one fiscal year and then utilized in the next fiscal year. And so there's no doubt that this year we are going to budget to spend $1 million of these reserves that we built up. But the reality is we were bumping up against what's appropriate. So we don't get to hold taxpayer dollars. That's not what we're here for.
I agree.
And we were bumping up against that. $7 million was too low. $22 million is too high.
And I remember, and that was a 41%. Sorry, I flipped my millions and sometimes. Okay, 41%, I believe, the first year I came on the board was where our general fund was, which is too much money. So we have been buying them down. Mm-hmm. But I want to point out, is me saying it's doom and gloom, we are publishing these doom and gloom numbers. So if our numbers aren't right, I guess we'll have that discussion later on when we have the.
Yeah, I don't see what we got published as doom and gloom, though. That's the difference between you and I is I see the numbers that we've got published and the tax rates that we're proposing, whether we go at the $2 supplemental or the $92 supplemental. The numbers we've got published, much as we've done for years, are realistic budget numbers with us doing what we need to be doing and showing plenty of funds in reserve for the rainy day. I've talked to you since you joined the board and probably even before that the key for us is to set budgets that allow us to have flexibility for unforeseen circumstances. We're doing that. We've done it and we're doing it.
I think another component of that is unforeseen circumstances that are seen as something that enhances, and quite frankly for me, and I voiced this before about the use of TIF funds starting to be for projects that offer a return.
Yeah, that's just a change of philosophy from what Story County has been doing with
TIF. Correct. That's correct.
Please
don't say if my numbers are incorrect. They've been generated out of another department and they've been published incorrectly because they are the numbers.
No, the numbers I'm questioning were the ones that were on the screen on TIF revenues. And as far as the rest of the budget, all I'm saying is you're taking the numbers that are published and I think offering a doom and gloom perspective on something that I don't believe the numbers as published offer a doom and gloom.
All right. If we go back to those numbers, though, it clearly shows that we don't have a lot left over of TIF revenue for the next 3 years for the rest of the county. If they come up with a proposal, the Mayor Collins was here this morning. He stopped by to see me on the way out. He said, Loris, if I could have $25,000 in TIF, we could have a grocery store in Collins. I said, how do you do that? And he explained that a community co-op, that $25,000, right, would be to renovate and bring in coolers or whatever. What's the bigger impact economically for that same $25,000? code, our columns, the mayor can identify where that would be an immediate economic impact that would put immediate dollars back in. $25,000 is very little in this request of the $3 million plus the ongoing $200,000, but we buy into this, we don't have money left over.
Sure.
But
I think that's a separate conversation, because the reality is, if we want to put on an agenda and talk about our urban renewal plan and how it's structured and how we can keep our townships whole. So the one thing that you don't point out there is our schools are largely made whole. It's primarily the Colo Unesco School District, but they're largely made whole. And so that's 48% roughly of the TIF dollars that are coming through the county are replaced by the state. It's like new dollars coming to Story County, and us being able to leverage those for positive impacts, a grocery store in Collins or a healthy life center in Ames, for positive impacts for the people of Story County, I believe, philosophically, is completely appropriate, and I think that's our job to have those kind of conversations if we want to put that on it.
Okay, and we're happy to bring it back, because we had discussed before about what economic development programs we were going to stick with, and we had that, and we said we're going to stick with what we have now. So, and in response about the school districts, and I've said this to a couple different people who asked me about this, that is funded year by year by the legislature. And when was the last time they funded 100% of those dollars?
I don't think ever.
Ever.
But that does not negate the reality that there are hundreds of thousands of dollars coming to Story County that would not be coming to Story County if we weren't running this program every single year.
And part of that, to look at that philosophy, is from the very start, the Story County has had a policy to only take 50% of the dollars.
I wrote that policy.
I know that. Mm-hmm. So, and you very strongly advocated for it over the years. But part of your advocacy has been that backfill to the school district exists. We have heard Bob Johnston, before I was on the board, sit there and talk about that it literally was on the committee floors to pull it. It's been up on debate in front of the legislature two or three different times that money will continue, and we don't know from year to year. So entering into this type of agreement with the expectations, given that money will continue to flow to the Colo Unesco School District, with what we can see has happened from year to year in multiple attempts to pull it down at the legislature, makes it probably a higher percentage bet than it does Bill 165 will make it all the way to law.
Yeah,
right?
I don't think it's a higher percentage bet. It's not being discussed this year, and in the years it has been discussed, it's never had a realistic chance of passing. But with that philosophy, Loris, and maybe that's the philosophy we have now, but we would not have done Dakin's Lake if that's the philosophy we had. We would not have done the research park if that's the philosophy we had. Again, maybe that's the philosophy we had. That was a different board that did those things. Maybe this board is not going to have that philosophy of really trying to make sure we're positively impacting Story County.
We all weigh in on what we think is appropriate to fund TIF dollars with. There are many ways to impact positively. So, appreciate that discussion. Took you a little bit off, but you can see how integral, you know, some of these funding sources we're talking about are. Supervisor Merkin, we've kind of been going back and forth here having the discussion. Did you want to weigh in or take us in a new direction?
A couple of things. It bothers me, and Rick said, the property owners and residents of Ames will have an ability to weigh in on this on a vote.
If it gets to that point.
Mm-hmm. If the county contributes through TIF, the other one-third of Story County residents do not have the ability to weigh in on it. I think that's something, that's another place I have a problem with this. I have a problem with it coming from TIF. We've already done a huge TIF project that's in the city limits of Ames, another fairly large contribution to the city of Ames, particularly. I think that we need to know from other people in the county. I think they should have an opportunity to say whether this is someplace they want their tax dollars going.
Yeah, I mean, so by that philosophy, that assumes that we're not, as a county, pulling tax dollars out of Ames to spend another place in the county. And I think if you go around, it's got to be approaching 70% of our tax dollars come out of the immediate Ames vicinity, and we're not spending 70% of our tax dollars that we collect anywhere. We're not spending on that third of the county. We primarily spend it in the two-thirds of the county that's east of I-35. And so, I've always viewed Story County as one county with boundaries. We got to recognize where our population centers are. And I think that this is a completely appropriate opportunity to utilize TIF as it was intended to be used when Story County entered its method of using TIF. And again, if the philosophy changed, the philosophy changed. It just hasn't changed for me.
Yeah. And I appreciate your reason when Story County started using TIF, because I mentioned before in my previous life, I covered TIF when in how it was originally designed, with urban renewal, revitalization, blight, and or funding projects that the property came back onto the tax roll to make to go ahead and pay. It wasn't a situation where one entity or one source of revenue came in to then cover the payments for some nonprofit thing or public entity. So I appreciate that, because TIF has a long, 50, 60 year history, and at various times it's done various things. Where we are now is that I didn't get any slips, and I appreciate that as I put the word out that we're only going to limit to people who had not addressed this already or if they had something else to say. Because this really was our time to talk. So if there's anyone who feel they have not addressed us already, or they have something new to say based upon what was said to us, what was said up here today, I invite those people to come forward.
I would like to address this.
Sure.
So let me just say, Jane Halliburton coming to a microphone in the boardroom is very nostalgic for me. This is how I started watching board meetings.
Hi, welcome, Jane, former Supervisor Halliburton.
Thank you. In full disclosure, I am a past member of the Story County Board of Supervisors. I'm a past member of the Heartland Food Services Agency. I'm a current member of the League of Women Voters. All of these things go together. I thank the board for allowing me to address it. I must say, first and foremost, I have been and continue to be extraordinarily proud of the staff of Story County. Staff of Story County has always done an exceptional job. They have been recognized by the state. They have been recognized nationally. And I personally have seen the work that Deb Shildroff has done over the last 5 years. I would ask the board, please, in the future, always allow your staff make their recommendations based on their work, and to do it in a public way so that the public understands. She has been an exceptional member, as all of our employees have done and continue to do. Just to throw it to the lecture, because I know you said Rick had just returned from NACO. NACO has recognized many, many times for different achievements. And it is purely because of our staff. And I just can't help but wish Al Hahn were here today. Al is the staff person, the facilities manager, who brought to the board the whole idea of geothermal at a time when the rest of the country was saying, what? And he brought that to the board and we talked about it. And it has changed the way things happen in Missouri County. I just appreciate that greatly. I would ask the board to consider the implications of what will happen without the town support. Because Heartland Senior Services has a long history of working with the county. The county has paid annually to the Adult Day Center, in particular, they paid it to Heartland. But the Adult Day Center is a unique thing that none of these other centers have. And if, in fact, we are not able to pull this together in another fashion, will the county support putting Adult Day Centers in all of these other communities?
If you're asking, or I mean, I don't want to interrupt if it was a rhetorical question. But
would
if
you like it to be a rhetorical question?
No, I want to point out that the county has always supported Heartland, as you know it yourself. And how we support Heartland is we pay a fee for service. And so at some point, this board or another board is going to have the decision if they don't, if the Healthy Life Center is not going to be the home for Heartland, about whether the county would, for the first time, contribute to a nonprofit agency in the building of their facilities, because how the county has always funded nonprofit facility, nonprofit services and nonprofits in this county has been through fee for service. So it's a new model to even say we would give, you know, we're giving money to Heartland for a physical, not for a physical space. Just that's why I asked.
We could discuss the definition of future service laws, but I think that would take too long.
Right.
My point is that there are multiple ways that the county pays for this. And the partnerships that have been established, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity with the university, with DMAT, with Mary Freeland. I would like to see us try to find a way to work together to build on that partnership rather than to have to start all over. And I'm just, that's why I'm asking the board to please consider the implications of what happens if we are not able to listen. And thank you so much. I do appreciate the time each and every one of you has spent. I know this is a difficult topic. I wish I could say this is the most difficult topic you'll have, but unfortunately, I know this. I know you'll have many, many opportunities to do this. But thank you so much. And if I've forgotten anything from my 24 years, I'll think of it as soon as I get home.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
I'll make it official and sign it.
Thank
you.
Okay, I believe nobody else stood up. So. Mayor Haley. John Haley.
There we go. Address. We understand. John Hale, Mayor of Ames. I understand that there is a financial aspect to this project you're wrestling with. What I've been most encouraged by in the 15 months I've been in office is what I sense is an attitude that permeates our county of working together. And the former board last year convened a meeting where we sat around in a circle and every community shared with enthusiasm what was going on in their communities, and it was positive and there's a can-do attitude. As you're aware, Nevada, we celebrate with Nevada, they landed a $150 million expansion to PERC, in part because Ames is willing to take their stuff. And we didn't do it because it was a fiscal situation. We did it because it was the right thing to strengthen the county. And what I would ask you to consider is there's a fiscal component. There's also, are we going to be leaders in the state? And are we going to be looking at opportunities to really set the standard? We're all aware of the fact that workforce is going to be an issue for decades. We want to continue to be forward-thinking, providing opportunities for families, for our community, for our surrounding communities to not only attract but retain. We have doctors that want to come to Mary Greeley. They ask, where's a YMCA? Those doctors benefit the entire county. It's not just the city of Ames. There's not an artificial boundary that goes around that. We understand that you have a responsibility to represent all taxpayers in the county. But I do ask you to take a bigger picture, a bigger vision of what we're trying to accomplish here. This is unprecedented to have the county who has been, we considered, a partner at the table, the city, the hospital, Heartland Senior Services, DMAC, Iowa State. It is unheard of that all these different organizations will become one-minded and work together for a quality of life that benefits our county. We do appreciate the fact, please, we do appreciate the fact that you have invested in the Desco Learning Center. That is an investment in workforce, is an investment in economic development. So I understand that you have to balance the budget. I get it. We're doing the same thing. We have similar challenges. But please, take a bigger picture, take a bigger vision of what we're trying to accomplish here. And it's not just for Ames. And honestly, if Ames, we have said this before, Mayor Barker here in Nevada and I have talked on several occasions. The fact is, what's good for Nevada is good for Story County. What's good for Ames, Story City, Huxley, and on, is good for the county. We have to think regionally. We just can't be thinking about this. So, the point being is, I ask you to seriously consider giving support, helping us out, work through it, be creative, look for ways to really benefit, and it is for the county. We can parse numbers all day long. We're going to go back and forth on data. There's a philosophy here that I would beg you to consider and realize that it can continue to strengthen what I believe is one of the best, if not the best, county in not only the state, but in the United States. Mm-hmm. And we have the opportunity to really benefit those who are in the community. Thank you.
Great, thank you. I'd like to address, at the previous meeting, you know, this leader, there's some inherent thought that leadership is not being fiscally responsible. And I'll respond the way I did a couple weeks ago about the fact of leaders thought of leadership being this vision is, can be part of it. Wanting these things can be part of it, but I still hold very firmly that fiscal responsibility is one of the main things that we get elected to do. It's the budget, and it's one of the main things that I believe people, I know when I vote for an Ames City Council person or mayor, I'm looking at fiscal responsibility too. So thank you. Anybody else care to address us? All right.
Yeah, so I think it's hard to question my commitment to fiscal responsibility. I don't think anybody can take a fair look at my time on the Board of Supervisors and not recognize that being fiscally responsible and wise with our taxpayer dollars has not ranked at the top of the list for me. That said, this is one of those moments. This is one of those opportunities that I think Story County is making a huge mistake if we don't continue in our partnership with developing the Healthy Life Center. And so I'm going to make the motion that we support the construction of a $48 million proposed Healthy Life Center with $3 million in one-time funds, and that we make a commitment to provide up to $200,000 subsidy to the operations based on a sliding scale percentage of what the deficit actually is. I would suggest that if this passes, details would need to be worked out between our legal counsels, but that's my motion. And if I can get a second, I've got something else to say.
I will second out of courtesy because you would like to say something else.
Yeah, I think that we need to recognize that our population center is absolutely Ames, that our tax base is absolutely Ames and surrounding vicinity. I think that in order for us to continue to see the outstanding growth by any metric that you want to put on it, population or valuation or income or anything you want to put on it that we've seen in Story County, we've got to continue to be forward-looking. And I believe strongly that this item deserves a chance to go before the voters of Ames, who is primarily going to be the one funding this. The second thing is, and I think I so appreciate Jane for coming up to the microphone, and like I said, it made me a little nostalgic. We need to recognize that this is not a zero-sum kind of decision, because there are implications for all of Story County with whether a concept like the Healthy Life Center gets done, particularly with Heartland Senior Service. I mean, we're in a building that has... And thank you to the City of Ames for allowing them to have this building, but I think we can all agree it's outlived its useful life. I mean, we have to do something, and the county is realistically going to have a role in that, so I don't believe this is a zero game. I think this is one of those moments. This is one of those times. It's not an easy vote, but the right vote is to support this.
Any further comments? I'll call for the vote. Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
No.
Olson?
No.
Okay. Thank you for everyone who came.
I would like to bring up something else.
Yes.
I said that one of my problems with this is the one-third of Story County residents who are not in Ames would not have an ability to vote on this. I'd like to, is Ethan Anderson here? I would like to ask you about some funding options which would require a vote. And I've gone through the code and I've read public purpose and essential functions and general function, all of that. So, yes, Lisa, thank you. I would like you folks to say, just ask, are there some alternatives that would allow Story County residents who are not residents of Ames to vote on county participation?
Well, it would be a county-wide vote, so it would be all residents of Story County that would vote.
Okay.
If it went to general obligation.
Yeah, 60% of that.
I'm going to look at.
And I would counsel that you would put that on the combined school city election, because every person in the county will get a ballot in, and then that way we can achieve the highest turnout as well as share the cost with the school district.
Auditor Martin, I have a follow-up question related to that. Ames is looking at their vote in August, so you have recommended that it be at the same time as the city school elections.
if Ames voters don't pass it themselves, is it possible to then pull it, or would that be too late?
For a special election, you have to give me the minimum amount of time notice. I think it's 46 days.
Okay.
So you would have plenty of time between August 6th and yeah, but we're setting the ballot. We would have by, I think, September 21st to get the notice. Don't have me do calendar math in my
it's
head.
Okay.
I haven't enough coffee.
We all believe that August
yes,
is
there will be time to make that decision.
Okay. So question, if we were going to do this, and I appreciate wanting to do it with a combined school-city election, but if we were going to do this and put it out to the people of Story County, which includes the people of Ames, why wouldn't we piggyback on what Ames was doing and have one vote one day, and it be that's when the most information is going to be out, and it gives everybody an opportunity to weigh in one time. It takes 60% within Ames to pass that portion, and it would take 60% for the whole county to pass our portion.
Do that. So the ballots in Ames would have two questions on them, and the ballots in the rest of the county would have one.
And we would be responsible for paying our portion of Ames and for the rest of the county. That would be a county-funded election.
Right. And I would recommend vote centers. So, and those probably very roughly cost about $1,500 per.
Mm-hmm.
That's really rough.
I have a follow-up question on that, Ed, related to information. I think that the steering committee already has a pretty healthy group, and I plan going forward to promote it to the Ames residents. We don't really have any type of information plan as of right now, sitting here at this dais, to put out to the Story County residents. And so thoughts from the two supervisors who have brought this up, or at least are discussing it, and the three of you about what exactly would that entail, or should we?
Well, I would encourage us to stay out of it and let the Healthy Life Center group be, if we were going to put it on the ballot, if it were going to be countywide, I would suggest it falls to the Healthy Life Center to try to create the support that they need to create to get that done. I would be hesitant for us to get involved, overtly involved in a vote of the citizenry like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just know that I've seen other elections, special elections, go forward for amenities, pretty much paying attention to them as a citizen of Ames. And now feeling this greater responsibility about how do the people that live outside of Ames, how do they get the information separately, especially about financial information from the county. And so that was my thought, is how do you put that forward out about what the numbers are, what in fact, if it were voted for the county to participate, and it turns out that the numbers issued, projected, while not guaranteed, projected by the auditor's office turn out to be the right numbers that I'm basing a lot of my decision on.
Do you have any other comments about this option for considering it? I've heard the options of combining with the school city election or the option of combining it with the city August 6th election.
Yeah, the August 6th is the city special election date.
Yes.
I mean, the city could also do it in November, but that's not a decision of the county, obviously. But we could put a question on any time there is a countywide vote. We can piggyback on that. Or we could use special election.
And then would we be in a situation where it could carry 60% in Ames, and because Ames residents are voting, it might go that same 60% on that same day for the county bond, but you could end up, what do you do if then you're outside of Ames voters
reject it, but there are so many Ames voters themselves that it is a passive.
That's the way the TIF revenue bond option.
Yeah, I'm just asking Supervisor Merkin here about, you know, is it the fact that then we take a look afterwards and see that every precinct outside of Ames defeated it, do you still feel that particular population you're interested in was represented?
They have an opportunity to vote.
Okay. All right. It's a unique option you've put forward.
Well, thank you. I think. I've never made a motion before such as this, so I would appreciate any assistance on how it should be worded.
Before you make a motion, I would encourage you to be really careful of not getting outside our published agenda.
Yeah.
Might be something, Linda, that we're best served, and Ethan, I'd look to you, we're best served to get this on a future agenda if it's something we want to take any action on.
I understand.
So, I am asking, even though you don't think it would carry through based upon how we worded continuing discussion of financial support, would not having a motion about how to consider that financial support be part of the agenda? So, you know, we've thrown the hot potato to Ethan.
I think appropriate to be and safer to put on a future agenda.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you. So then where we are right now is that the original motion by Supervisor Sanders has failed, and the board will be discussing now if we choose to put it before the residents of the county, and that will have to go to a future meeting. All right?
Yes.
Yes, Steve. Yes, please. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm Steve Shanker, City Manager, 515 Park Avenue.
So just a question. So what you're recommending is highly unusual. And I understand where the board is coming from. You have to understand that would be immensely confusing to the citizens of Ames. You're going to have to lay out the scenarios. They'll authorize you to issue the bonds. If it passes in Ames, it doesn't pass in the county, people will be quite frustrated, and maybe the other way around. So I just point that out. I think it's probably unprecedented that kind of election will be held. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate your creativity. The question I have is, so forevermore, when the board decides to spend money in any city, will the citizens of Ames get a chance to vote on it then before you make that decision? I mean, you spend a lot of money. There's a lot of bond issue money that is spent by the supervisors, and it's spent outside of the city of Ames. But it's paid for, and these sums is paid for by the city of Ames. So aren't you setting a dangerous precedent here? I'm just wondering. I would hope you treat us the same when you spend money on other bond issues that are being spent outside of the city of Ames. I also want to make a comment. The amount of money that was spent on the research park, I just want to make it clear, the city of Ames did not approach the county for that. It happens to be physically in the I understand the boundaries of it, but that was a separate decision and a wise decision, I believe, by the board for economic development. Whether that research park is in Colo or in Huxley, we made sure, the city council made sure, negotiated with the university that they would pay property taxes. That's a major source of revenue for the county. You can't look at it and say it's only benefiting the citizens of Ames. That's how you're going to grow your tax base. So I know you've given some other projects to, let's say, Story City, and I think you bought them benches and street lights, and I understand that in a downtown area. That's different, I think. I'm not sure you've done anything from your funding for the city of Ames, per se. I just want to clarify
that. Okay, appreciate that. Okay, so I believe where we are is that. Sure.
And you haven't made a statement about the $200,000 operating, so is that. I just want to know what you're thinking about there. You really can't vote on that, I don't believe, in a bond issue election.
the operation costs. So has that been dealt with finally too?
Well, the motion that was put out there was defeated, and that included the $200,000, or up to $200,000 in that particular motion. So we can't put that, you are correct, we can't put that on a vote. That's general operating funds that would come out of taxes, yeah, taxing at that time. So I just want to make clear, as like Steve, you're talking about a vote just for the $3 million.
That's what I was suggesting, yeah.
Okay. For general obligation bonds,
yes.
Which would come out of the general fund as opposed to TIP. Okay.
Thank you. Nancy Carroll, 205 South Walnut Ames. Just a couple points of clarification, too. With that, you know, this all was built on the premise of why we wanted the $3 million and the $200,000 ongoing was so that we would all play on an equal field from an operational when people would come to use the facility, which has been always escalated 25% more. So, again, I that has to be assessed. And 25 was the baseline. I mean, again, that has to be, there's nothing locked in that 25% will be the going rate. And it's not a threat. It's just a point of clarification because we have to be able to generate revenue somewhere. And we do believe that county participation, it may range around 30%, but we have to go back to that feasibility study that's what it was earmarked. So we have to be looking at how then to pick up for that. The other thing I think is really important to clarify, too, when we talk about Laura, just for the media here today and the people that wouldn't have been following this project, we were never publicly at 24th at million, 26 million went to 48 million. Never. When we came out for the first time public with a public meeting, it was after the city had retained very reputable feasibility study consultants. And it was a year ago in February where we were all in attendance at the same meeting, and we said the exact formula that we have never wavered on at $48 million and how we were suggesting the funding streams could be obtained. And we all knew that they had to be formally dealt with, and today is that day on the county's behalf. But I want to be very transparent with the public. We never wavered on what that dollar amount was.
Did you ever talk to any representatives from the city or from the county and about 24 to 28?
No, never.
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 Where did I pull that number
never.
From, Nancy?
Never. Never. I've never even socially used those numbers. Never. And again, I want to be very clear. When we have conversation, there may be a lot of conversations that anyone has. Let's just use socially or informally, but I want to be very clear. When we go public with anything, it is in a feasibility study, and it was held on February 5th of 2018. And that was the document, and we have been very transparent.
All right. Well, I give you, that was the first time you said it in public, but I know it was said to me.
Well, right. They were misinformed, and that was unfortunate. I don't know who they were.
Well, there are a lot of people out there.
The other clarification I think we need, too, what is the role, then, of the county moving forward on this guarantee?
Well, I want to back up to the first issue that you brought up first, and it was when Mayor Hale was speaking about how we're all in this together. It's hard to think we're all in this together when if Ames doesn't buy in, that residents outside of the city are going to pay a 25% or more. That message that's being sent is we're all in.
No,
we're all together. We're all one big happy family that play along with each other. But by the way, if you don't give us $3 million, everybody outside of the city of Ames.
Could I just say something,
yeah.
Please?
Sure.
I just want to say I've been a resident of Ames. I'm currently not a resident of Ames. I spent over a third of my life in Ames. I agree that Ames is a primary mover of this county. At the same time, I need to think about the fact that the residents, the non-Ames residents, the way this vote was going to be set, or the way that Supervisor Sanders was, and Will was asked, and Supervisor Sanders made the motion, does not allow a third of the residents to have a say in something that has been presented to us as a county-wide facility that county residents will take advantage of. That's why I felt it was important that there be some vote there. I don't expect that if we put money into as a board of supervisors into something in another community, say Colo, I don't expect that Ames residents are going to get a lot of advantage of that. That's where I see the difference on that vote. I also want to say that I know a lot of people who have worked very, very hard on this project. I know people who are donating money to this project and have offered donations. I'm not in any way, by my not voting for this, trying to denigrate your work or say that it's not a worthwhile project. This has been a very difficult vote for me. I didn't know until I got here to this table today how I was going to vote. And that's why I spent the time I did looking at the other resources around the county. That's why I spent the time that I did going through this report. So I still think that all the county residents should be allowed to vote on this issue if the county is going to put money into it, because it is a large amount of money.
So back to Nancy, can you remind me your third clarification you felt was needed?
No, I didn't have three. But going back to the 25%, Lawrence, again, it's the equity factor. It's this 25% has been in place within the city's policy for over 30 years. So it's purely, again, being fiscally responsible, to your point earlier. That is what this is. And so it's not, again, to be determined what that percentage will be, and I think the steering team will have to assess that. Given, though, now that you're not coming in for any, there just are costs associated with this facility that now have to be physically resolved. So that's where I'm just wanting to be clear today that has to be assessed. So it's not that we're still not all united. We still see everyone being a Story County resident very welcome to come to this facility. It's not that. It's just, though, we have to assess it. And I want to be very clear on that.
I appreciate that. You know, it's a steering committee is what you asked.
What's your representation wanting to moving forward then?
Well, we're not doing it at this point. I think the board needs to have this discussion. It needs to come back on the agenda and talk about what does this mean. What we know today is we did go in for $3 million with up to $200,000 ongoing financial support. Okay, that's what we know today. We need to come back and we need to have discussions. And definitely about the suggestions of Supervisor Mervin, possibly even at the same time, since there's been philosophy about where to get the money to, you know, to come in at a lower amount, maybe. I'll have to look at, you know, on the agenda if that is appropriate to be on that agenda too. Since we have different philosophies here about, you know, why the yes and why the no. So that's what I can tell you before. Now, and so the question to representation on the steering committee seems to be up in the air right now.
Okay. We're hoping, again, I think time is of the essence. I do not want to speak on behalf of the city of Ames, but there has been informal conversation within the steering team that the city council could be trying to move forward and take some sort of action on April 9th. And so we can't get hamstrung either in not moving forward now in an expedient manner, because we were looking to today to, I think, have kind of factually where are we at, because we've been doing this for over 3 years now. So
sure.
In respect, we do, though, need to keep moving forward in a very quick manner.
Quick manner. So, Supervisor Sanders, to your best of your knowledge, are you going to be in town here at the meeting leading up to April 9th?
Yeah, I don't know when. I don't know a point between now and May that I'm gone again.
Okay. Supervisor Merkin, I know you're headed out for a few days of R&R, but you plan on being back next week,
I'll be
right?
Back Sunday night.
Okay, and so there would be probably no problem you making the meeting this evening. As far as I know, I'm here. So I think your April 9th request, or by April 9th, certainly can go. Probably the 26th is what I'm thinking, and the reason I'm saying the 26th is we pushed a lot of things that wanted to be on the agenda today. We pushed them back to next week, to the 19th. I just pretty much said no. Okay. So it would be the 26th where I think that we could discuss what exactly that motion or what Supervisor Merkin is talking about, and also we can have an updated discussion on the philosophy in using revitalization funds. So if that pleases the other two supervisors, that fits into your time frame of the 26th. I imagine we will be seeing most of you back on the 26th.
So before we move on, and not to belabor this too hard, Linda, I want to get some clarity on what you just said, because pushing this thing for a vote for the what you refer to as the other third of the population outside of Ames, I want to know what kind of threshold you're putting on that, because so are you suggesting that any urban renewal dollars need to go to a vote of the county? Are you so we spent $3 million on Dakin's Lake. That there was no vote there from the county. That was that's what we're elected to do. $4 million on Tilk. There was no vote there. We're in the process of doing $3 million for a new radio system. There's no vote there. $8 million for roads and bridges, including roads within Huxley and within Nevada. There's no vote there. And I'm confused about where the line is, why this one needs to do that and the others do not.
That's right.
And is it all urban renewal that you're seeing in the future that we're going to make sure that anything that goes out to outside the Colonesco School District, which is and a couple townships, that we're going to offer an opportunity for the citizen to vote on all that? And I just feel like you're potentially hamstringing what the three of us are elected to do, which is a countywide election for all three of our seats.
And I'm still looking back at our civil attorney, and I know now our county attorney has joined us. Just I'm hoping they'll give a prompt if when they start feeling uncomfortable if we've gone too far off our agenda item here today. I'm wondering about
that. I don't have any concerns.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you.
May I make one comment?
Hi, Ann. I'm sorry, Mayor Campbell. I'm sorry. Go, please.
I'm Ann Campbell, and probably wearing a combination of the Healthy Life Center hat as well as my past mayor hat, and saying I have difficulty seeing how it can be possible for the city of Ames to base a number for a bond issue on what has been raised philanthropically as well as from the other entities, and then have the county at the same time having a bond issue that may or may not pass. So the city has got to know what they have before a bond issue for the city of Ames can be put on the agenda. So I understand wanting to bring county people in, but in essence, I think it is impossible.
Thank you. I appreciate your wise advice. We do have a lot of former or current elected officials in here, so from the standpoint of us getting the wisdom of experience is good. So, you know, thank you for that. And that, like I said, I keep on looking at the attorneys, and they're comfortable, and if we come back and discuss this more, or if we resolve it today and leave it with the vote the way it is. There's a motion for a smaller amount. You know, we turned down a particular amount, so that's why I'm looking here at that. So right now, this is where you would like us to bring it back. And the board has had a long standing to let you know that that if a supervisor wants something discussed, every attempt is made to accommodate that supervisor on a future agenda. With only three of us, it's the best way to do it so that we stay open and stay transparent.
Well, I presented my motion, or I tried to present a motion or suggest a motion as an option.
Right.
That's the only way we can discuss what our options are or at this table on Tuesday morning.
So thank you, and I'm going to look at Shelley to remind me. Did we get a second, or did we get into discussion before a second? You didn't vote for motion. Thank you.
Supervisor Sanders questioned whether I could do that under our agenda as posted.
Thank you. And then we got from our attorney, it needed to be the separate a separate agenda. All right. So we're going to stick with on the 26th. Yeah. And we will discuss whether you want to make that motion. We can discuss it further. And then we'll discuss also about urban renewal, TIF funding, opportunity, discussion. And we will once again try to have what would be a definitive motion that all three would support, whether they like it or not, but that there's a vote, a finality of a vote here. Thank you once again for those of you who came. Thank you.
I'll be right back.
Thank you, Ethan, for being here. Probably going to have some follow-up questions for you headed into March 26th, okay? Thank you. All right, we're going to move forward. And Alyssa, are you going to go get her? Okay, excellent. All right, if anybody else wants to take a two-minute break, now would be the time to do it. Well, we wait for Alyssa and Susan to come forward. Yes, 2 minute break. Or until all three of you come to the board. Okay, well, yes.
Agenda item, or are we just going to
introduce? Yes, I will list the agenda item. We are now going to begin with discussion and consideration of the fiscal year 20 health insurance options. Presenting is Alyssa Wignall and Debbie Dean.
Good morning, Board.
Yeah, it's still morning.
Good morning.
We are here today. As many of you are aware, our Aetna renewal came back at 33.2% for the next plan year. So at the point we received that renewal, we marketed it, so we took it out for bid. I am going to let Debbie just kind of describe a little bit of what we did and how the bid did come back from the other two companies.
Go for it.
Sure, thank you. It'll pick up. Oh, okay. Yes, thank you. So we did take the renewal and the available claim data and went to both United Healthcare and Joint Medical Cross Shields. In Iowa, those are our other two fully insured providers. As such, we did receive a proposal from United Healthcare. However, it actually was a proposal that provided higher pricing than what we received from our health. Walmart, on the other hand, came back with better pricing than what Aetna was giving to us. And Aetna then took an opportunity to sharpen their pencil some and brought their pricing down some. However, Walmart's pricing, both platforms and networks that they provided, both their broad-based national network and their Iowa-based network, both provide lower pricing at this point than Aetna.
Debbie, I'm going to ask you to move your mic a little bit. I'm having trouble hearing.
You are.
Okay. Do you want to switch to that? You can talk into that. That one won't project.
Oh, it won't? Maybe that's my problem. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. I'd be happy.
Okay.
That might be better.
Sounds better. It does to me. Maybe I'm the only one having a hard time hearing this morning.
I may not be talking loud enough, so I will try to speak a little louder as well. So, just to recap, in short, we still have a significant renewal to manage, but that increase is less at Wellmark on their Alliance Celeste network. And then when looking at the alternate network, which is an Iowa-based network, again, we still have an increase, but it is, again, half in round figures of what we initially were facing. Actually, quite a bit less than half of what we were initially facing at the 33% that Alyssa just mentioned. And we have asked both providers, both UnitedHealthcare and Walmart, to match our current level of benefits. United did not match exactly, but given the fact that they were the highest priced vendor, it made little sense to force them to tweak much because the rates would potentially have escalated more.
So we just want to make sure it's clear that the benefits that we currently offer were matched on the Walmart. So the design did not change.
Okay. I'll ask if either of you have any questions. I do. This is a little bit reminiscent of last year of having to look at providers. And last year's board decided to stay with Aetna. There was a little bit of a difference, but it felt it was in the employee's best interest to leave with Aetna. Now you're recommending that we switch.
That's a very good point. And so, would you want me to?
Sure. Well, and I'll just bring up a little bit before we get into a recommendation. So what you see on the agenda is the $6,500 plan that we purchased, the fully insured product that we purchased from Aetna, and the rate through Walmart. What we offer our employees is different. We partial plus that down to different points. So we have a $500 deductible, $1,000 deductible. So we also need to look at what those rates would be, what we would charge for those rates to determine what the increases would be for employees. So while we do have an increase on the product that we buy, it's not directly the same increase that the employees would see, if that makes sense. We, in essence, the rate, the monthly rates that we have are fully insured rates for the offered, what we offer our employees.
Right.
And there is a difference because we need an amount of partial self-funded amount.
Okay. And this has come about rather quickly since you got the raise. So will the employees have an opportunity to weigh in on this, or will we be making the determination today?
We're asking the board to make the carrier decision today.
Okay.
The rates would come back at a different time. We do have two bargaining contracts that have the rates set forth in that, and past practices that we keep the rates all the same for all employees.
Question is, assuming this board continues, I think the direction set by a previous board, that we would try to move toward fully self-insuring over the next couple years. Are you factoring that into your recommendation where we'd like to end up running, administering our program when we're fully insured?
Yes, we've had discussion, Debbie and I have discussion about this. Ideally, Walmart would be our recommendation. That's where we would like to be. We do have options. I do want to note that the partial self-funding that we've done since July 1st has worked well for this county.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't have enough claim data and different. We haven't done it long enough to see how that would affect our premiums. We moved to that so that we could try to stabilize our current premiums. unfortunately, it didn't happen the first year. Doesn't always typically happen. When we look at the full rate we would charge employees, we did reach out and ask, because as Aetna, what the increase would be on those two plans. And they said,
it gave us an estimate of 24%. That's not an exact firm actuarial percentage. It could be slightly more, slightly less. But in short, they're probably not likely to calculate what that exactly would be on a $500 or a $1,000 plan unless we have an interest in purchasing those. And given how well the partial self-funding has worked, it would not be fiscally a good idea to move back and purchase the $500 and the $1,000 plan over buying a higher deductible and partially self-funding it. So all we have from them is the 24% estimate.
We do have the rates from Vaughn.
We do.
For the two networks. Mm-hmm. And their increases would be substantially less for the majority of the plans. There were two, the single, on the, if you go with the same network that we have, those but the family, the percentage increase on the family plan was single digits. If they would choose the blue rate. They're around
15 or 16% for the Walmart market. Okay. Other questions? All right. Take a motion.
Can I just make one of them?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
Our two contracts had a clause in there that prior to any change in carrier, the employer agreed to meet with the union. Debbie and I did meet with morning to kind of give an overview of what the situation was and what was on the
bridge.
So we had met that obligation.
All right. Thank you.
So are you guys to the point that you're willing to make a recommendation of where we go with carrier?
Yes. Go ahead, Meg.
Do you have anything else to say about the change carrier? Anytime you change the carrier, there will be the option in front of the board, the recommendation for me is to move to Walmart. We looked at the numbers. The decision that the board needs to make is which network. We have an Alliance Select, which would be comparable to what we currently offer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the Blue Choice, which would be higher than that.
And I think you said that we could offer both of those without any numbers. I mean, if one employee chose to take one of those, we'd have to have a certain number to offer it.
What Wellmark has indicated is that they do technically have a percentage, but they don't require that obligation to be met. So, in essence, the email confirmation that I have from Wellmark is that, yes, they will allow a second plan, even if only a few or one enrolls in it.
Okay. That's good news because I think it's important to offer some choice to employees on that.
So. Another piece that I have done a calculation is we need to take into consideration the affordability of the ACA as far as employee contributions. So in order for it to be affordable, our employee contributions have to be at a certain level. And as looking at this, moving to Walmart, we would be under that. We use the federal poverty level as our
mm-hmm.
how we look at that, and we would, with this change, still be under that. And there would be no concern in that area. There's something when we see a 20-30% increase that does cross my mind as far as will all plans still be affordable.
So I hear a preference and a recommendation for Wellmark, correct?
Correct.
All right. Entertaining a motion?
I move that we move to the Walmart plan, the Alliance Select, and the Blue Choice at the $6,500 plan.
Yeah, I second, and I just want you guys to reiterate, is there a downside? So I understand that Walmart has said we can do this. Is there a downside to us doing this, offering multiple plans?
You know, Rick, at this point, there's no known downside. Any insurance carrier, whether it's Aetna, Wellmark, or United, always has the option at some point in the future to say, we are going to require you to have 3 or 5 or 10% in a second offering. Because just because they're waiving that now doesn't mean that at some point in the future they might not choose to enforce it. However, as a general rule of thumb, Wellmark works with a number, if not most, of our public entities in the state, whether we're talking counties, schools, or cities, that can be both good and bad, but as a general rule of thumb, they're willing to partner with you on that. And as we move toward self-funding, truly the decision at that point is ours as a county and not theirs.
Yes, I see value in seeing where our employees will choose to be. And so I like this option as long as you guys don't see any big downside.
I just want to remind everybody that this is setting the carrier. I will be coming back in a couple of weeks with contribution rates. Because with at least one of the plans, it does trigger the employee contribution increase for two of our union contracts. So I'll be back in front of the board.
Employee contribution rate. All right.
The first step is determining which carrier we're going with.
Okay, thank you. So we had a motion. I believe there was a second from Sanders. All right. Further discussion? Merkin?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Thank you. You guys have a tough job. We
so
actually
lucky
bring
to have
it
them.
In.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. You've been scrambling. Thank you. We're now going to enter into our public hearings portion, and we begin by the introduction of elected officials and department heads. And just starting in the front row, stand up and introduce yourself. It's probably going to be the easiest way and quickest way to just go around here, okay?
Joby Brogdon, Director of Facilities Management.
Thank you.
Good morning, Fairly. Jessica Reynolds, Story County Truth.
Good morning.
Nancy Harris, Story County Recorder.
Thank you.
Lucy Martin, Story County Auditor.
Jerry Moore, Planning and Development Director.
Sue McCaskey, Story County Animal Control Director.
Alyssa Wignall, Director of Internal Operations and Human Resources.
Deb Schildroth, Director of External Operations and County Services.
Great. Moving to the back row, I see the sheriff back there, and a Trey.
Carla.
Oh, Carla, God, I'm sorry. Whoa.
Community Services Director, Carla.
Yes, thank you, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, looking back. All right, moving on.
Andrew Robinson, Story County Treasurer.
Paul Fitzgerald, Story County Sheriff.
Good morning, everyone. And we're going to turn it over to Lisa Marchley and Lucy Martin.
Was published in all three official newspapers to start at 10 o'clock this morning as required by law. The budget that is adopted today cannot be higher than published, but it can be lowered at this public hearing. I have handouts available both of what's on the agenda, what is on the website, and this presentation if anyone's interested. Story County did see valuation increases. The county-wide increased 7.57% and rural increased 9.24%. Rollbacks are then applied to the valuation increases. For residential this year, it's 56.9%, agricultural 56.1%, commercial and industrial 90%, and multi-res is 7.5. This is what you actually pay if on the taxes. If you have a $100,000 house, it would be a set, it would be taxed on 56.9. So we held our departmental meetings back in January, mid-January. The audios for those are all on the website if anyone's interested. There was in this budget, there is an across-the-board salary adjustment for the five bargaining units. They have 2% in the contract with varying payment fixes. There's a 2% cost of living adjustment for non-union, and health insurance premiums were budgeted to increase 15%. That's about where we're going to be probably. the asset contribution was increased by $132,521, and we have a CIP, capital improvement plan, that's going to be presented, I think, Leanne said, next week. The numbers are included in this budget and includes funding for secondary roofing equipment, cabin at Dakin's Lake, Health Phase 3 at the ISU Research Park, Prairie Rail Trail expansion at Dakin's Lake, Hickory Grove sewer replacement, HVAC rooftop replacement, and E-pole roof replacement. We are also putting this budget funding for urban renewal small communities and the home base. The different funds that the county levies for, I'll explain per code of Iowa. Countywide means every taxpayer in the Story County pays this. For the general fund, which is the majority of our funding, is in the general fund, it's $3.50 per thousand. The supplemental is limited to certain mandated services. It's also on countywide. The supplemental levy proposed in this budget is increasing by $777,000 from 92 cents per thousand to $1.02 per thousand this year. Mainly the insurance costs have increased. The county MHDS fund, the maximum levy is calculated in a totally different manner than any other levy. The rate is capped per region based on population in such region. For our region, the per capita limit is $35.50, which is translated into $3,461.321. The region recommended 2.1 from Story County, which in turn is a levy of 44 cents, which is down from 47 cents last year. The debt service levy, we're anticipating new debt this year for secondary roads projects up to $8 million. And StoryCom upgrades up to $3 million, so we're levying 16 cents per thousand on that. The rural basic is all residents in the unincorporated area, and it's the maximum for that is $3.95. We're recommending $3.28 per thousand. Tax assessments for this proposed budget are higher by $2.4 million, and the overall levy rate is higher by 6 cents per thousand countywide and 16 for rural. You're fine. So we work through all the budget sessions, and then it all looks different when it comes to publication because it's by service area. What I've done here is put a graph together of our budgeted revenues by service area. 65% of the $42.4 million in revenue, 65% comes from property taxes, 21% is from intergovernmental, which would include road use tax, state replacement taxes, commercial and industrial replacement, state and federal grants. 5% is going to come from our local option sales tax, 6% from fees for the services, 2% TIF revenue, and 1% interest and rental. Our expenses are $43.5 million. Again, by service area, that's how we budget, and that's how we put our budget out. 30% of our dollars, $13 million, is for public safety and legal services and includes services for the sheriff and the attorney. 15% or $6.6 million of it is classified as administration. That's going to include facilities management for all buildings,
Information Technology, the Board of Supervisors, County Liability Insurance, Auditor and Treasure Management. 60% of our budget is about 6.3 is for roads and transportation, and that's secondarily scrubbing. 11% or 4.5 is for county environmental education and funds, and educational funds. Funds conservation, animal control, planning and development, IRBM, the county libraries, and the urban renewal projects. 4.9 is for capital projects, road projects, and CIP projects. 6%, 2.6 million represents health and social services. It's going to be environmental health, county community services, VA, juvenile court, DHS local office, and many of the asset services. 1.9 is for mental health for local and regional. 1.6 is for bonded debt, and 1.5 is for government and governmental services, which is classified as the recorder, the auditor's elections, and the treasurer's motor vehicle. This is where we come up with what we want in our ending fund balances by expenses by fund. We want about 25% in the general and the supplemental. So debt, you can see that's where the majority of our expenses come from. Rural fund and secondary roads fund are fairly steady, so we can budget closer to 20% ending fund balance. This is our budgeted county budget for the last 7 years. The dark blue shows the budgeted expenses. The red is the budgeted revenues. For the FY20 budget, the expenses are 9.5% higher than the FY19 adopted budget, and the revenues are 6.1% higher than the FY19 budget. This shows the current year distribution of dollars by taxing authority. We'll take a look at individual on the next slide, but this gives you a snapshot of overall where the tax dollars are generated by taxing authority. Schools get about 46% of our dollars. Cities get about 25% of our dollars. About 17% at the county, and then all the other entities are below 5%. Pick Story City this year. I said to Lucy, which city shall I pick? This is the way this
My 15-sided die.
So, if you live in the city of Story City and you come into the treasurer's office to pay your taxes, the breakdown of how those dollars are distributed is represented here. So, this is based mainly on last year's levies because all the entities are now posting their levies in our offices or our office as we speak. But I'm using the county's proposed in this one. The school budgets don't get certified until April 15th, so that's for another month. If you have a home assessed at $100,000, I already talked about the rollback, so it would be a taxable value would be 56.9. Your annual taxes would be $1,786. Of that, the school, Roland Story, would receive 44%. City would get 33%. County would get 16%. And the area school would get 2%. The other, which includes Ag Extension, County Assessor, and Story County Hospital, would be about 5%. If you lived in Lafayette Township and Roland Story School District, the pie would be just a little bit different because there would be no city taxes. There would be township taxes instead. Here it would be $1,427, and the school would be 55% of your taxes. County 33%, the township 3%, and the area school 3%, the other taxing schools 6%. I'm going to put this out on the website, or if the end might have already done that for me. Any questions?
None. Thank you. Anything from the other two board members?
No, great job as always.
Okay.
Lisa, yeah.
All right. So, comments, thoughts here before we go ahead and go on to item number 4,
which is consideration of Resolution 1990 as recommended by the Story County Compensation Board, setting elected official salaries.
So one comment before we go on. I want to point out again, giving a historical context to where we are. So the graph that I love is up there, but we've gotten to the point on the graph where it doesn't show where we were prior to FY14 and how this is the graph I'm talking about. And what happened here prior to 2014 is you would have seen the blue line on top of, and dramatically on top of in some cases, the revenue line. And I want to go back to FY9, we are spending, the proposed budget here is in essence the same number of expenditure dollars that were spent in 2009. The difference is in taxes collected in 2009 from the people of Story County was $18 million, and we're up to $28 million now. We knew that there was a shift at the state back then that we were going to put more and more on the back of local taxpayers, and that is in essence what we're seeing. But this idea that because we've got expenditures ahead of revenues this one year, that it's a terrible thing, I don't believe it is. And what I would point to is what we're able to get done in our capital improvement program with our capital projects. We did what we budgeted just over $4 million last year. We got almost $5 million budgeted this year. That's got to be more, Lisa, that's got to be more than the previous 8 or 10 years combined in terms of capital projects that we were able to budget. We'd always been in that $1 to $2 million range prior to that. So we're getting some great things done, and we're buying some of this deferred maintenance and some of the needs for Story County residents down by our wise budgeting all the way through. And I've been hearing this subtext that it's not looking good, that it's not fine, and it really, really is. And so I just wanted to give you that historical feel of where we were, where we are, and where I think we're going.
I commend the previous board, because it was a couple of different boards since 2014, in taking the difference in the times and reacting to that and being able to do that. And there's no question that your leadership was a great part of that. To portray me as doom and gloom, I don't feel I'm being doom and gloom. I'm trying to carry on what I believe it will be solid budgeting. So and then with that, I think we've probably hashed that one to death, but for today in the previous discussion. But and we will probably have more discussions on that. So right now, taking a look at what we've got right here, comments about where we were published, because we went out and published at the higher amount than we've got an item to deal with before we talk about that. So let's go back to the elected official, the compensation. Sorry. So do either of you care to make a motion?
Yeah, I'll move to approve 1990 as recommended by the Compensation Board.
Okay.
Oh, and I guess I'll wait till a second and I'll make a note.
Morgan? Okay.
Yes, I'll second that.
Okay. Yeah, and just a note that we did, in fact, lower the portion paid to the Board of Supervisors, specifically the Board of Supervisor Chair,
correct,
already. And so that should be recognized. While it's not part of this motion, it should be recognized.
It's actually in the motion.
It's actually in the resolution.
Okay.
So. Okay, great. All right. Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. All right. We will go ahead and now come to,
yeah. Go ahead.
If you're going to help me walk through this part, I would welcome the aid here.
So on my agenda, it just says we do the public hearing before we do what we just did. And so I was worried that maybe we missed something.
Did I? All right. I will open the public hearing. Thank you. I will open the public hearing. Seeing no one step forward, we will close the public hearing. Thank you. And now we will go on down to the discussion and action on the proposed budget. So
I open up for comments from anyone.
Well, when we increased the tax rates in the budget for publication, we did so because the legislature was talking about putting some severe limits in the future on our funding abilities, our revenue-generating abilities. We won't know what the legislature is going to do about that until the legislature's done this year. So maybe discussing how we feel about that now, because I didn't know that I saw that as a permanent decision, but that was kind of a placeholder decision. So I'd be glad to hear how others think about that right now.
I'll go with
you.
So it in essence is us raising $300,000 of taxpayer dollars more than is absolutely required for this year's budget. I believe it's the wise decision based on what we don't know. I would hope that if we go down this road and we approve the budget as published, that we recognize that it ought to mean that we're able to hold our increases in check next year, assuming the state doesn't do something I'll kindly refer to as nuts. But the key is, if they do, we put Story County in as favorable a position as possible, because it's not the $300,000 this year that matters. It's the compounding of that over the next decade that matters, that you'd be looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of $3.4 million, all said and done, that we would have access to serve the people of Story County, that we would be limited from if we don't take this preemptive step. I'm not a fan of it. I don't like the tax rates going up. I'm happy to report that they're nowhere close to what they were the first time I sat down in this chair, but they are very clearly going up, and it's a pretty dramatic jump in 1 year. But I think it's the reasonable and responsible thing to do this year based on what we know. We just need to recognize that it is pulling $300,000 more than we probably would have to, but it's based on something that we're afraid the state's going to do.
When I was thinking about that, doing the numbers, you know, that I did the little mini calculation there, and it is from the supplemental, so it is countywide, and I do agree that setting here for the $300,000 this year, we're still in protection from what will happen, may happen. And then we hopefully will not have to look at an increase for the next year, a couple of years. I struggle more with the rural fund, leaving that at the 9%, or the 0.9-something% there. Although I take into account during our budget workshop discussions, in that we had not raised taxes at all on the rural fund, I'm still thinking that maybe that's a little too high for the unincorporated areas. So I would be willing to consider coming down on the rural fund part of it for the unincorporated areas. And I would come down about 4 cents, 4 to 5 cents.
What would that do to our ending balance in the rural fund?
We're looking at 14.8% right now, and if we lower it, it's going to make a minimal difference, but it will make a difference down to 14-ish.
Okay. I remember the comment that you made about it being a bad year for people who are farming, and that impacted me in part also.
So you said 4 cents?
Yeah, 4 cents.
Okay. I will make the motion to decrease the rural fund tax rate by 4 cents from what is published.
Okay. Am I getting a second there? Yeah, I'll second. Market?
Yes.
Sanders?
Nope.
Olson? Yes. So we are going down 4% in the rural.
4 cents.
Thank you.
Thank go review the numbers and sort of bring them adopted at that rate.
Okay. Thank you. I believe that takes us all the way through the budget portion of our agenda. I'm looking for a nod of an affirmation here. So from Lisa, I'm letting her really run this show. Okay, all right, thank you. All right, so now we will go ahead and we'll flip over and invite County Attorney Jessica Reynolds up there to the microphone. We'll talk about consideration of Ordinance 282, and it says it's the first consideration, an ordinance of Story County, Iowa, providing for probation fees. Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Thanks for the board this afternoon. Jessica Reynolds, Story County Attorney. Just as a refresher, this is the ordinance, which is the fix to state versus person. It was published on March 7th, and I'm before you here today with the text of the ordinance requesting passage of it after you have a public hearing. I haven't had any feedback other than good feedback from CCJ and their board and their attorney, and so I'd also request that you consider waiving second and third reading.
All right. Thank you. Motion or comments? Followed by a motion?
I would move.
It's a public hearing.
Thank you. All right. I'm sorry. We'll open the public hearing. Seeing no one. Sorry. I will close the public hearing. Thank you. Now I'll take the motion.
I would move approval of ordinance number 282 as presented and to waive second and third readings.
Sorry. Okay. Discussion? No more further. Merkin?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Thank you very much for your assistance in this matter.
You're welcome.
Have a great afternoon.
You too.
Yeah, bad afternoon. That's right. Thank you. Now, Jerry Moore is coming up for the next discussion and consideration of Resolutions 1962 and 1963, a partial acquisition and vacation of 199th Street right away, which is Northwood Heights 2nd to 4th edition. Good morning, Jerry.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I know. Okay. It's still morning in my mind. Wow.
It's always morning in your mind.
It is. Yeah, by afternoon, I'm ready for my nap.
I didn't get home till 3 a.m. So I'm a 9 p.m. You know, I like to be in bed at 9 p.m. So I'm running on empty right now.
Well, congratulations. Wow. But did you have a good time down at basketball?
Yeah, so the game ended last night about, 10 o'clock in Oklahoma City, and then getting back is, you know, wee hours.
Okay. Well, thank you for your participation and your help this morning. All right, Jerry, we'll turn it back over to you for the presentation.
All right, it's a vacation acquisition request. David and Mary Corey are the applicants. Mr. Clarence Corey is here today, who I'd like to acknowledge and thank. He's been very helpful, very instrumental in the review and submittal that the staff has done, so I want to thank him for his assistance with.
You got to see government at its finest today.
Oh, yeah.
So David and Mary are the applicants. They live at 4025 199th Street. They're interested in acquiring some property from the Stearns, who live at 3855 199th Street. Their property is contiguous and just to the east and south of the Coreys. And as staff was reviewing the request, we were concerned that the Stern property, if they acquired this land, would fall under the minimum lot size in the R1 district, which is 25,000 square foot. So we started looking at the area and noticed right away that there was some issues with the right-of-way. There's more area on the north side, particularly adjacent to this proposed request. And so to address the right-of-way issues and try to help the applicants with the request, we suggested the vacation and the acquisition as the approach. So 199th Street is a private street maintained and owned by all the property owners within the Northwood Heights subdivisions. This just shows you the subdivision. So the second edition is actually the largest area, has the most number of lots and dwellings.
The third edition is on the very end. It happens to be owned by the Homeowners Association. And then the second edition is in the center. So the Corey's property is right here. The area that they're interested in acquiring is the triangular-shaped piece. It's the north area of the Stern property. And it's just east of their detached garage, which is right here. The dwelling for the Corey property is right here. Dwelling for the Stern property is right here. They're also interested in acquiring additional land just south of the LP tank. This shows you the right-of-way. That's the purple lines. You can kind of see here how disproportionate the north right-of-way line is compared to the south right-of-way line. This black line represents the common property line between the parcels on the north side and the parcels on the south side. So through the vacation, which is on the north side, we're going to reduce that space, get it more proportionate and similar to the right-of-way distance that's on the south side, which is right here. This is the map that was submitted by Stumbling Associates. There's a couple of things going on here. The first thing is we're showing you the existing right-of-way width, so it's the farthest line is the north right-of-way line currently. The second line from the bottom is the south right-of-way line, and so what's proposed is to make it more curvilinear and match up better with the actual existing road. So the crosshatch area on the north side represents the vacation area, and the south portion represents the acquisition area. These two arrows represent existing property line, which is, again, it's this black line, which is close to the center of the road. And then what's proposed will be more curvilinear in this area, and it will follow the center of the actual street. So there's two processes set out in the Story County Land Development Regulations for vacations under 87.10. Our ordinance references state law, Code of Iowa 34.22, which is a process that's initiated by proprietors, or in this case, property owners. The other process is initiated by county, governmental entities in situations where property has been dedicated to the public, which is deemed to be by the governing body of no benefit to the public. We did ask the county attorney's office to weigh in on the two processes, and with this particular situation, they suggested the first scenario, which is a process brought about by the proprietors. And we do have full support of all landowners that will be affected by the vacation and the acquisition. And that was posted on the agenda center. History, Northwood Heights, second through fourth additions. Again, it's R1 transitional residential district. Subdivisions were platted in 1968, 2006, 2009. We're looking at about 23 building lots, 23 single family homes. The area is about 800 feet northwest of the city of Ames. The Corey's acquired their property in 2007, and Mr. Stern acquired his property in 2004. This shows you the changes with the existing lot area. Right now, the Corey's have a little over an acre, and they're going to be changing to 1.12 acres, which will be an increase of about 4,700 square feet. The Stern property will increase about 2,100 square feet after the vacation and acquisition is completed. Communication side, we started this request back in May of 2018. Public notices were mailed to property owners within a quarter mile. State law says 300 feet. We do a quarter mile. We communicated with utility companies in the area, mortgage holders. In February of 2015, we prepared publications. We're required to do two publications in the three newspapers designated by the board. We did that March 7th. And February 21st,
We did communicate with Ames Planning and Housing. They deferred their review on the right-of-way acquisition. They're actually reviewing the boundary line adjustment between the two lot owners. And then the county attorney's office did their review on the agreement that was prepared October of 2018 and the actual submittal that was presented February 11, 2019. Site photos, Corey's property, we're looking to the northeast. We're going to be traveling to the east down 199th Street. Just to give you an idea to the area that they would like to acquire. This is right after that big snow that happened. Stern dwelling to the east, the Denner property, and then that's the intersection, 513th Avenue and 199th Street, looking north. Turning 180 degrees, this is the Homeowners Association property to the south. Looking to the west, 199th Street, the Murphy dwelling on the south side of the road. We're out at North Dakota Avenue, looking south, looking to the north. We're panning to the east, 199th Street. Points to consider, again, this started with the request to acquire some property by the Coreys from the Sterns. We wanted to make sure that the Stern property didn't fall underneath that minimum lot size requirement. We're looking at a total of about 0.4 acres, which is a little over 17,000 square feet of land to be vacated and acquired. Planning and Zoning Commission addressed the request March 6th at their meeting. There was nobody from the general public that spoke in support or opposition. We had a question from the chair about whether or not the property owners that were affected and the mortgagees, if they were contacted, and we assured that they were, and they did provide a document that was signed by all of those parties. And so based on the information that was provided to the Planning and Zoning Commission, they voted 4-0 to recommend approval of the vacation and acquisition. This is admin 02-18, that's alternative 1, which is the Board of Supervisors recommends approval of the partial vacation and acquisition of 199th Street right-of-way located in Northwood Heights, 2nd through the 4th additions as put forth in admin 02-18, and again, it's resolutions 19-62 and 19-63. Be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you. All right. Any questions before we open the public hearing?
Just one. So I understand vacating the north right away. Acquiring the south right away, that's all homeowner association ground.
Right.
How does that legally happen? I mean, who's the legal entity that can, or do we just have the authority to make that happen?
The attorney provided those deeds. The various types of deeds that address all of the property ownership changes.
Okay.
And so the right-of-way, what they gave us was easement on that south acquisition portion. So we're bestowed the right to for the general public to use that space that's being...
So it doesn't matter where our line is in that, from a legal perspective.
Right.
Okay.
And it'll stay in private ownership.
Other questions? Okay, I'll open the public hearing. Mr. Corey, did you want to say anything? You don't have to, but...
I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. I don't think the board has any questions. Jerry and his staff do a great job of preparing us with that written report. It's nice to see two neighbors get along. You read so much anymore about people who don't get along. So that's a very amiable solution there.
Okay. Any reason for us not to waive second and third?
Actually, it's not an ordinance. They're resolutions.
So we do see a action
for that. All right.
So I move...
I'll move the public hearing.
Oh, sorry. What you did.
Oh, now I finally remember at the end of the meeting. All right, we're going to close this public hearing, all right? And I would entertain a motion.
Yeah, I move that we approve resolutions 1962 and 1963.
Okay. Second. All right, no further discussion, Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Enjoy your new lot line. Thank you very much. Next, we'll go to consideration of minutes.
Move approval of the March 5th, 2019 minutes.
Second, even though I wasn't here.
All right. No problem. And Merkin?
Aye.
Sander?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Consideration of personnel actions?
I move consideration of personnel actions is listed.
Second.
Merkin?
Aye.
Sander?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Now on to consent agenda.
I move approval of all the items on the consent agenda as listed.
Second.
Merkin?
Aye.
Sander?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Okay. We have no other items except for the Liaison Assignments Committee meeting updates and announcements, et cetera. And I'll let Supervisor Sanders tell us in 1 minute. Yes. Sorry. Public Forum 2. Would anyone care to participate in Public Forum 2? Thank you. Seeing no one. Now, Costa Rica.
Costa Rica was awesome. Highly recommended. It was where we went was a non-commercialized area, and so lots of jungle, lots of monkeys, lots of beach time. I think I broke my big toe hiking in the jungle, but other than that, it was and I had a little sunburn. It was a phenomenal trip. And then D.C., I just find so much value in NACO. I appreciate former Supervisor Halliburton getting off topic just a little bit today to address that. Actually had an opportunity to speak to a full house in the Capitol on a presentation on health services in county jails. Linda, it would have been much more appropriate for you to give that presentation for us, but since I was there and I was asked, I did. Had several senators and congress people, and then a full room. I think the video is available on the NACO website on that presentation, and was joined by two other county commissioners and one sheriff out of the state of New York to do that. And the rest of it was meetings galore and lots of good networking opportunity. The weather was terrible, but not as bad as you guys had here. And then finally got back just in time to go to Oklahoma City with the Iowa State women's basketball team, who they did a great job. Lost late last night to Baylor, who's the number one team in America. And then we got on a charter plane and came home. And I got home about, like I say, 3 a.m. And looking forward to seeing bed again sometime soon.
Great. Okay. Before we leave, would you care to tell us about your new committee assignment?
Yes. Well, I don't know a lot about it at this point. Council on Human Services, Governor called and asked if I would please take that on. It's kind of a last-minute request, and I am either really, really good at saying yes to the governor when she asks, or really, really bad at saying no to the governor when she asks. So I'll report more as I learn more. It appears that they meet once a month on Thursday mornings, which works into my current calendar, and I'll tell you more as I know more.
Okay. All right. Supervisor Merkin.
Well, I'm still meeting more county staff. We have so many good staff. I spent some time this last week talking with the jail diversion staff, Stacy and Tyler. They're doing a wonderful job. And I think we can be very proud. I also was at the sheriff's office to retreat, and I think we can be proud of what everybody in the jail staff is doing. Also, our county employees who are working on the watershed working group are continuing to meet and add a couple more people, and also looking at the implementation matrix and do some more refinements, and we are really on roll. So in a few weeks, we will have a report to all the supervisors.
Good.
And then I'm going to leave here tomorrow and go see the Grand Canyon, and I hear it's going to be snowing.
In Arizona?
Yes.
First time I went to the Grand Canyon, it was so foggy you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. And I'm going to tell you, there's nothing less impressive than the Grand Canyon in dense fog.
Oh, I'm just really looking forward to
it.
You go to Costa Rica and
yeah,
the Grand Canyon
right.
In bad weather.
Okay.
That's
okay.
It. And I'll be back next week.
Great. Okay. Just want to acknowledge that we had a reception this morning for Sunshine Week, and we did have a couple of journalists show up, so thank you for that. Dear to my heart, that Sunshine Week. I attended several meetings. The one that stuck out for me was actually the debriefing after closure of I-35 during the blizzard that we had.
And I'd never been to a full briefing like that before. And they pointed out that the truckers, I think the big themes were communication, and the truckers did not want to go and park at Hilton and Jack Trice Stadium because there was no diesel fuel there, or food, or restrooms. So I think that that's one of the big lessons that came out of this, is the emergency responding group are going to reexamine some of their assumptions as they move forward in case this ever happens again. And with that, thank you, everyone, for sitting through the morning and the afternoon. Thank you to all the staff that worked very hard on budget numbers to lead us up to this budget. And everybody have a good rest of the week. Thank you.
I move adjournment.
Thank you. All right.
Prerogative of the board. You like
I would like, I'd rather talk it. Thank you. All right. We are moved and adjourned. Okay, thank you.